Welcome back to our class 7, part 2 of chapter 11 of the book of Daniel. Welcome all of our foundational faith family and also that of Destiny Bible College students. On page 285 of our textbook, we're continuing the struggle between the North and the South of the South and North empires. And of course, these originated with that of Ptolemy and that of Seleucus, that were generals of Alexander the Great. With that being said, let's pick up on page 285 and let's look at our scripture out of Daniel chapter 11, verse number 7. But from a branch of her roots, one shall arise in his place, who shall come with an army, enter the fortress of the king of the north, and deal with them and prevail. Now, now with the death of Bernice, and also that Ptolemy of Philadelphus had died, we see that now the individual that's being mentioned would be of her roots would be that of the fact that Bernice and Ptolemy of Philadelphus were brother and sister. And we see that Ptolemy actually that would have been the third, and also Evagetus is another name for him. But you can see this listed on page 284 in the list of your kings for the south. He assumes the throne in Egypt, and this would have been Ptolemy's Philadelphus, his son, and this would be now Ptolemy the third, and he was the brother of Bernice. Now we continue to see the revenge and the striking back and forth amongst these two families of the north and the south. We understand that Ptolemy the third, he actually takes a revenge on the north, and with a fortress of military force, we should say, he goes to Cilicia, where Ludus was, and he won the battle, and he captured Laodice, and he put her to death. And so with that being said, we can look at verse number 8 of the 11th chapter. And he shall also carry their gods captive to Egypt with their princes, or excuse me, with their prince and their precious metals and silver and gold. And he shall continue more years than the king of the north. All right. What we find here is that when Ptolemy the third goes, which was Bernice's brother, goes to Syria, he goes there and conquers, and he takes the riches. He seizes the silver and the gold. Matter of fact, from the historian Jerome, we find that he lists that there was as much as 4,000 talents of gold and 40,000 talents of silver. And then also he would have acquired, Ptolemy the third would have acquired even the Syrian gods or idols. And of course, that's not very impressive. And when we think about scripture that's mentioned here in Psalms 115 verses 4 through 8, I won't read them, but really there's the scriptures right here in your textbook technically. You know, it's just dumb to mess with dumb idols. And think about it. They have eyes, but they can't see. They have a mouth, but they can't speak. They have ears, but they can't hear. They've got a nose, but they can't smell. They have hands and feet, so they are no benefit. So what we see is that during the tribulation, We're going to see how that multitudes will worship whatever image is placed in that by the Antichrist into the temple. We continue to see this strife and this fighting continual, going back and forth. We see in verse number 9 and 10 of the 11th chapter, it says, "Also the king of the north shall come to the kingdom of the king of the south, but shall return in his own land." Now, what we find is that by this time, and I'm going to call them by the second and the third, we have, and there's another name, Calenus, but Seleucus the second, that reigned in 246 to 226, then there would have, he would have been the one that went to strike, but it did not avail him. He ended up having to retreat, as the angel even predicts. He had to return to his own land. So this would have been Seleucus the second, also known as Calenus. The attack, but he lost the battle and he returned home, excuse me, empty-handed. Now, verse 10, excuse me, however, his sons, they stirred up strife, is what verse number 10 says. What we find is that Calenus or Seleucus the second actually had two sons, and one of them, the oldest, would have ended up being the third, Seleucus the third. With that being said, his youngest son, we see the names go back to Antiochus, and we see that he is called Antiochus, which would have been the third, but he's called the great. He assumed the throne. So we find that these two sons attempted to attack Egypt. We find that Calenus, these two sons that he had, the oldest one, he was looked at as being unpopular as a leader. And we even see more issues within the government and the attacks on one another. So two of the generals actually poison this older son. And then we see where Antiochus the Great comes and assumes the throne. And so we see that Antiochus the Great, as he assumes the leadership, he continues to make war preparations. There's many believe that he was a much better leader. And we see that he launched an attack and he won a big victory against the Egyptians at Gaza. And with that being said, and he was also considered trying to conquer the entire nation. Now, what we see is geographically some things that are interesting there, because against the Egyptians at Gaza. Now, with that being said, just think about the Antichrist will move into the Middle East, and he will even move to the south through Gaza and take Egypt, and several other nations will fall at that time. What's interesting is what we have on the forefront right now that ought to give us some insight to think and to watch, because right now part of the area that is of concern, even in the moment that we're living, is what's taking place there in the west area, West Bank, and that of Gaza, and or the Gaza Strip. And of course, that's on the west side of Israel and north of Egypt. And I think that's interesting that we would have these parallels from this period of time with this strife between Syria and Egypt, and it would be even in some of the same territorial. And of course, this will be an interest and a conflict of things for Israel. Now, verse number 11 gives us further insight of the seesaw. And when we say seesaw, this is going back and forth. And the king of the south shall be moved with rage and go out and fight with him, with the king of the north, who shall muster a great multitude, but the multitude shall be given into the hand of his enemy. So that's verse number 11. So we're being told that the angel is continuing to speak to Daniel, that Egypt, in the anger, they would go out to fight Syria. And of course, with that of the greatness and the power of Syria, we find that even with Antiochus the Great, would have been known as a much better warrior in that of what Syria had had before. And so we find that there's this defeat. So with Ptolemy of the Philopater replace his father, which would have been the third, as king of Egypt. We find that Syria's victory at Gaza, it angered. He finally struck back and defeated Syria's great army. So we continue to see this going back and forth, one winning, the other one winning, this strife between them. In verse number 12, it says, "When he had taken away the multitude, his heart will be lifted up, and he will cast down tens of thousands, but he will not prevail." Let's give this some thought. We find with this struggle that continues with Egypt and Syria that actually he would have been Ptolemy the fourth against Antiochus the third, which would have been the great. We see where that there's this great defeat of Antiochus the Great, and there was thousands, tens of thousands, and then there was prisoners. But because of his pride, we see of winning this battle, he did not continue to go on and conquer the whole kingdom of Syria. There was a peace treaty that was made between him and Antiochus the Great. And so we can understand that there's going to be a great defeat that's going to take place when the Antichrist comes. The Antichrist will be filled with pride and he'll defeat many nations. He'll move quickly and swift through that of the Middle East, but eventually they'll come to an end and he'll have no help himself. In Daniel chapter 11 and verse 13, it says, "For the king of the north will return and muster a multitude greater than the former, and shall certainly come at the end of some years with a great army and much equipment." It's interesting to get a concept of what is actually been going on and going on with what's related here about a peace treaty. We understand that the king of the north, which would have been Antiochus the Great, and we find that Ptolemy the Philopater, which would have actually been the third, we find that there's this treaty. But when Antiochus returns back to Syria, he begins to equip, he begins to build his military, he begins to equip his army. And even the scripture says, and shall certainly come at the end of some years with a mighty army and much equipment. And, you know, it's amazing what military strategies that can be carried out, what military force, what military equipment today that's so much more advanced than even their period of time. The angel here in verse number 13 is giving a prophetic that Syria would do this. They would actually equip themselves, and actually after some years they would advance again in a military strike against Egypt. Now, excuse me, the peace treaty that was signed between Ptolemy the Third and Antiochus the Great, it allowed the king of Syria, or the Syrian king, to go home. We see that he started doing the rebuilding that we talked about. Now, here's something to think about that I'm going to take and look directly from our book, because it helps us, as I started to say or was mentioning just a few moments ago, we can see these things going on right now in our world. Some covenants are just tools to buy time or gain an advantage. And so we find that there's a 14-year period of time that Antiochus the Great builds a powerful force, and he enriches his nation, he prepares them. And so with that being said, so he received word that the Egyptian king Ptolemy had died, or Ptolemy the Third had died, and his five-year-old son Ptolemy Epiphanes had succeeded him. So now in Egypt, we've got a five-year-old king on the throne. And I can understand where maybe someone of Antiochus the Great, he saw this and looked at it as a situation and a good time to attack Egypt. And so he broke the covenant. He broke the covenant with Egypt. He thought that this would be an easy victory. I want to emphasize for just a moment the point that's being made there with that of some covenants are just tools to buy time and gain advantage. So at least for 14 years, with this giving even Antiochus the opportunity to go back home, it gave him a season of time to rebuild, to be strengthened. And then, of course, we see in Egypt the death of that of Ptolemy the Third. And now we see that Ptolemy Epiphanes, a five-year-old, succeeds. Now, with a five-year-old king that has been crowned in the kingdom of Egypt, we definitely have already stated that Antiochus Epiphanes of Syria saw that this would be an advantage, and he begins to reach out to strike against Egypt again. One of the other things is that is interesting how that even there was Jews, and it's mentioned in the scripture, that would side with Egypt. It says, now in those times many shall rise up against the king of the south. Also violent men of your people shall exalt themselves in fulfillment of this vision, but they shall fail. So there's even Jews within Egypt and back in Israel who are going to join in to the rebellion. All these rebels believe that Antiochus the Great would defeat Egypt. So to briefly just state some things here, we see that this helps assist in the fulfillment of the vision of that of the ram and the goat. We are seeing how that things are being placed in order for even the Roman empire is coming to the aid of Egypt. But when it's all said and done in verse 15, let's look at what takes place here. It says, so the king of the north shall come and build a siege mount and take a fortified city, and the forces of the south shall not withstand him. Even his choice troops shall have no strength to resist. So, yes, a lot of this was in reference to the rebellion that resulted from crowning a five-year-old as king of Egypt, and also insurrection of the Jews greatly weakened Egypt. And of course, this was an advantage for Antiochus. And so it gave him the opportunity to ride out, strike Egypt. Now, we understand that with the Romans entering the picture, it brought a new view of this, of what's taking place. And of course, there was a famous Egyptian general named Scopas that came on the scene, and he went out to meet Alexander the Great. And still, Egypt was not strong enough under this to defeat his army. And so we see that the battle goes from that of the location of Egypt and Gaza to that of Sidon. Or they fled to Sidon or Sidon. But we understand that Antiochus the Great, he continued to pursue. And he laid siege, and he actually, upon doing that, he actually starved them out in some aspect over a period of time when he besieged the Egyptians. And he actually, Antiochus and his troops would have actually captured Sidon. And in humiliation, he would have actually sent the surviving troops away. He would have actually caused them to flee with that of even nakedness. So I can just imagine the humiliation of these warriors from that of the kingdom of the south. And so we see these things that the angel is giving Daniel being fulfilled. In Daniel chapter 11 in verse number 6, it says, but he who comes against him shall do accordingly to his own will, and no one shall stand against him. He shall stand in the glorious land with destruction in his power. Now, the angel is providing this information about Syria and Egypt because their struggles greatly affected Israel. It seems like that every time, and we can continue to see this back and forth, the seesaw, that each one of them attacked at each other. These invading countries or these invading kingdoms, they would come through Israel. So we can see that it was creating havoc for the Jewish people. And so with that being said, no one was strong enough to stop him, talking about Antiochus, the angel's telling. he would settle down in the glorious land to be strong enough to destroy it. Now, with that being said, let's consider with this fact of the glorious land, it gives us some indication of end time with the Antichrist, but let's look at it from the perspective of what's going on right now. Let's remember that the Egyptians have made aid treaties with Rome. So what Antiochus will do, he is locating himself in Israel. It gives him time to ponder. It gives him time to plan. He realized that he had the power that he could have destroyed Israel, but it's believed that one of the reasons he didn't is because the Jews had rebelled and supported him rebelled and supported him in Egypt. So that's maybe some consideration there, that this gave him another period of time in his planning, as he just occupied in that particular realm of the glorious land, which would be that of Israel. Now, we understand that the Antichrist, he's going to invade Israel. He's going to use it as a base. He's going to use it to attack other nations. And, of course, we all know that for those last 3.5 years of Jacob's trouble, that he is going to definitely be, he's going to be Satan incarnated in flesh. That's one way to say it. So there'll even be the declaration or the proclamation that John said, the apostle, there'll be those that will worship him, talking about the Antichrist. Revelation 13:4, it tells us the statement is, who is like the beast? So that's an acknowledgement of people saying, look at this. They're seeing in the realms of wanting to look at him as a god and the power that he has. And even the statement of who is able to make war with him. So they're talking about even the Antichrist's power and his authority. Of course, we understand that we can see that his character will be none other than that of what we have spoken of in the past, of how that he will exalt himself just as Satan did, that we find in the prophet Isaiah's writings, and also that of the writings of the prophet Ezekiel. Now, what's the point that we want to make here that's interesting and important is, no matter what exaltation that he has made himself and occupation of even the Holy Land and used it to subdue with his power the Jewish people and also the nations of the world. We understand that when we go to the book of Revelation, chapter 19, verse number 20, we see the final end of that of the Antichrist. And he will not be cast in hell, but he will be cast down to the lake of fire. Because hell, death and hell, is going to be cast into the lake of fire. That's what's going to happen to the Antichrist. And so there is this indication that the Antichrist will have some control over that of the geographical. And there's even mentioned the glorious Holy Mountain. But he will be captured, and he will be cast into the lake of fire in Revelation chapter 19 and verse number 20. As we continue, let's look at some other diplomacy or even another treaty situation that Antiochus the Great attempts. Verse number 17, it says, he shall also set his face to enter with the strength of his whole kingdom and upright ones with him. Thus shall he do. And he shall give him the daughter of women to destroy it, but she shall not stand with him or be for him. Now, the angel is giving us an understanding of the next move that Antiochus the Great will take in his attempt to conquer Egypt. Now, or the southern kingdom, we also need to remember that this is even bringing the Roman influence of power more into the picture. Now, he still has a desire to join in any way he can the forces with Egypt to conquer Egypt. With that being said, it has been stated that his plan of a false peace treaty would be with having a daughter that would be just a few years older. And now we see that Tomalee Ephanes has begun to get a few years older, and he wants to suggest or make a treaty that his daughter, Cleopatra, would marry Tomalee Ephanes, this child king that had been of Egypt. Now, let's make some clarification here, because most of us, when we hear Cleopatra, we think about the Roman leader Julius Caesar and Mark Antony. That would have been somewhere between 69 and 30 BC. We're talking at least another 100 years before that. And so we're talking about another Cleopatra. Matter of fact, it would be of value to know that there was at least seven Egyptian queens named Cleopatra. Now, the plan of Antiochus the Great was, as I stated, was that his daughter Cleopatra would marry, and he would marry that had been the child king of Syria, excuse me, of Egypt, which was Tomalee Ephanes. Now, what happens is that we know that Antiochus the Great is going to use this with the anticipation that his daughter will be loyal to him. And this will give him the opportunity from the inside to manipulate and begin to dominate and control the Egyptian king, and to bring about that of a defeat over Egypt. Now, what happens is that doesn't happen. That doesn't happen. Actually, she is not cooperative, and she's loyal to her husband, and she is an ally to the Egyptians against her own father. So this maneuver, this treaty, this process that Antiochus the Great attempted did not work. Now, I was bringing out something a little bit earlier that I did not go through all the process of, and it was in reference to all covenants or true covenants are just tools to buy time and gain advantage. Now, I want you to think about the strategic conniving, if you want to put it that way, that Antiochus the Great attempts all these different plots to weaken Egypt or to take control. This is even going on today, and this is where I was wanting to go a few moments ago. There's a point here in your textbook on page 293 that I think is important. I'm going to read this because I want you to listen to what's being said, because there is an application today. There's a word, Saladin, and it actually means righteous of religion, or also a Muslim leader who broke a peace treaty. So let's look at what's going on here with this statement that I've highlighted in my textbook that I think that's appropriate with what we're seeing taking place with Antiochus the Great as he continues with all these different procedures to weaken, to destroy, to conquer that of Egypt. Today, the Arabs and the Palestinian are suggesting that Israel should swap land for peace. Now, how long have we been hearing that? We've heard that definitely in my lifetime. We've heard it in the last 40 years. Peace treaties in the 70s with Jimmy Carter, the Clintons, the bushes. Now, with even the Egyptians and the conflict that's going on in Gaza right now, with that of Hamas, the Egyptians have even spoke up about about a Palestinian state. It continues to be land for peace, and even the Prime Minister Sharon, that was the Prime Minister several years ago in Egypt, he made several trades of land of Israel's property. And matter of fact, I don't know when we discussed this, but right now, geographically, Israel really doesn't even occupy 10% of what belongs to them. So with that being said, let's look further. There's two definitions of peace in Arab language. Now, this is important because this applies today, and if it applies today, and this is what we're seeing schemed back then in this period of time that we're discussing, that Daniel's getting these revelations from the angel's message, what do you think we're seeing today, and what do you think's coming? The first definition is the true peace we Americans think of. It is the kind of peace that has existed between the United States and Canada for many years. So they're given an analogy here, how that we have this peaceful relationship with our borders. Now, we could go into discussion on the other southern border with situations, but let's go on. The second definition is the peace of Saladin. And I gave you that thought just a moment ago, a Muslim leader who broke a peace treaty. That is a truce that can be broken at a convenient time. It's actually an operation of the Arab or the Muslim even today. What are they calling for? They're calling for a truce. They're calling for a ceasefire. And of course, the word that the world hears, the American hears, the politician hears, the side of humanity or caring is to release the hostages. It'll give time to release the hostages. It'll give time for those that have been wounded that are Palestinians. And listen, folks, I say that not in any argument or dishonor to people in life. And you know, I hate to even say this like this. War is hell. It's the next thing to hell. And the innocent get hurt. But even the fact of wanting a Palestinian state, taking land away from Israel, even a truce is just for a convenience for the enemy to break that treaty. And that's exactly what we need to realize that's taking place with the definition. It's not a working peace where there's harmony and we're working for each other and it's been proven, but it's that of making a convenience that you can break the treaty that you've benefited in. And we can see how that this has taken place with Antiochus the Great over and over with all these different attempts that he has attempted to stay in Israel, to watch, to build his troops, and now even go to the point of, okay, I will not only take advantage that there was a child, and that's what got his eye on Egypt. Hey, you know, an advantage. Now I will plot even with my own daughter. So we see that that didn't work out the way that he wanted it to. We got to understand that Antiochus the Great was a warmonger. And, you know, some people say that Muslim militants say, or Muslim militants say that Islam is a peaceful religion. Now, I honestly believe there is people, and I'm going into some area I probably shouldn't, that are Muslim or Islam. They want to live a peaceful life. They came to America and they want to live a peaceful life. They want to practice their religion, things like that. But there again, when you get into the militant that says their religion is peaceful, no, it's where you surrender and become and convert to Islam. It can be said like the textbook. When Muslim militants say Islam is a peaceful religion, it should be understood that they are really warmongers trying to bring about peace by forcing the whole world to convert to Islam. They are at war with non-Muslims, and there can be no peace until there are no non-Muslims. Now, I'm going to reemphasize something. They can't even be peaceful amongst themselves. There's groups in that of the Muslims, and I won't go into all that. But what this does give us an understanding of is with this mentality, this continual strategic of Antiochus the Great, and he's a forerunner in the lineage of the Antiochuses, Antiochus the Great, because actually that would have been Seleucus the Fourth, and then after him would have been Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes, and that's where we get the understanding of the characteristics of the likeness of that of the Antichrist that's coming, because of his ruthlessness during his reign, during even that brings us into the Maccabees era of time. The Antichrist will actually be no more than a wolf in sheep's clothing. He's a warmonger. He will come on the scene. He will seem to be a man of peace. He will have the opportunity to make treaties. There will be Jews that will side with him. There will be Jews that will be deceived. And then we understand that his whole goal and plot was to destroy the Jew. So we need to keep these things in consideration of how these previous things that the angel is giving Daniel the message of are going to be his, they're going to be prophetic, and now they're historical, even though they were prophetic, and now they show us prophetically what's coming. We're going to go ahead and take another break here in our class, and we're going to conclude class 7, part 2. I hope this is helping you. I feel a little bit better by breaking this up, this material, a little bit more, being that the 11th chapter is so intense with these items that we have discussed. We'll be coming back with class 7, part 3 of chapter 11 soon. God bless you, and we hope that this has been helpful in your studies.